I still remember well when karaoke machines were first brought onto the scene many, many years ago, decades ago. All of you are familiar with those now. It was many years ago, but I remember it vividly because that karaoke machine caused me and my church a good bit of trouble. When this newfangled product hit the market all those years ago, I remember a member of our congregation, his name was James, immediately went out and bought this machine. James is a very dedicated member of my church. That was back in the days when I was in the Baptist church. James was a deacon at our church, so he had a significant leadership role. James taught our largest Sunday school class, kind of like the Backsliders, big group of people every week. He also sang in our choir and had an absolutely beautiful tenor voice. Well, he bought the karaoke machine, and just a few days later, he brought it to a church-wide fellowship on a Sunday night in the summer. We had watermelon. James turned his machine on. He began to sing some of the songs. He got other people to come up and do so, including even the senior pastor, and everybody had a great time. It was a huge hit. Well, again, everybody has these machines now, but back then, not so. And so James became kind of a celebrity around our town. People invited him to come to birthday parties and wedding receptions and the like. Well, eventually, James began to take his machine and sing at the bar on Friday night. I don't remember the name of the bar. In my job, I don't frequent them very often. Not good for job security, but anyway. James didn't drink anything. This was a teetotaler Southern Baptist deacon. He didn't drink, but he sang, and he loved to sing. And the people at the bar loved him singing, and of course, he invited others to come as well. And he soon became a fixture every Friday night, which is now popular all over the nation and world, I assume. But back then, it was a great novelty. Well, several months passed, and one day I received a phone call from a couple in our congregation. They didn't sound very happy. They set up an appointment. They came to my office at the church, and the first thing they did was close the pastor's door, which always makes you a little nervous. And then they looked at me and said, "Preacher, we have a problem that you need to fix," which is never what you want to hear when people come in. And they began to complain something fierce about James and singing at that bar on the karaoke machine and how sinful it was and how it was a bad witness and that it was hurting the reputation of our church all throughout the community. And finally I said, "So what do you want me to do about that?" And they said, "Preacher, we think you should remove James from the board of deacons. He's not fit to be a leader in our church anymore. You need to take away his Sunday school class. You need to ban him from singing in the choir. And actually, we think you should just kick him out of the church altogether." Well, I knew I would have difficulty satisfying this couple. They were very dedicated and good folks in a lot of ways, but they were extremely self-righteous, judgmental in their faith. I tried to reason with them and said, "You know, I'm not sure that what James is doing is particularly wrong. After all, he's not drinking anything. He's just singing at the bar. And while we may think Christians should not be hanging out in bars, let's remember that Jesus used to hang out with sinners all the time, with tax collectors and prostitutes, and he got criticized for it over and over again. I'm really not at all sure that this is bad behavior." "Well, of course it is," they countered. This went on for 30 minutes. I knew that I could not satisfy this couple. And so I gulped and said, "You know, even if this is questionable behavior, and I don't know that it is, I am not going to remove James from the Board of Deacons. I'm not taking away his Sunday school class, not going to kick him out of the choir, and I'm sure not going to kick him out of the church. And I added, you know, if we kicked out every sinner, perceived or real, depending on how you interpreted that particular situation, but if we kicked out every sinner in the church, pretty soon we would not have one deacon left to serve. We wouldn't have a single Sunday school teacher. We would have no choir members. I don't mean to offend you, okay, but we wouldn't. In fact, I said, if we kicked out every sinner in the church from membership, we wouldn't have any members left, not a one, including me. We would have a congregation of zero. So I'm sorry, I cannot do what you're asking me to do. Well, as I expected, they were not happy with that, not satisfied, so they brought out the big guns that I've heard on numerous occasions through the years. Pastor, if you don't do what we are telling you to do, we're going to leave the church and we're going to take our financial contributions with us. I said, I hope you won't leave. You are valued members of this congregation. We don't want to lose you, and that was very true. But again, I cannot, I will not kick James out of the church simply for singing on a karaoke machine at a bar on Friday night. In the end, we all kept our word. I didn't kick James out, and they indeed left the church and took their financial contributions with them. So what do you do about sinners, real or perceived, in the church? How do you deal with the fact that very few, really none of us in the family of God, live perfect lives? That is the issue in today's text that was read just a moment ago from the Gospel of Matthew. You know, by the time that Matthew wrote his gospel, the church had been around for many decades already. And they had been in business long enough to know that not everybody lived as a perfect saint, that there was a lot of sin and a lot of imperfect people in the congregation. And so the church struggled. How do we respond to that reality? And there were some, the purists, who wanted to purge the church, who wanted to get rid of the sinners, who wanted to practice church discipline and be kind of hard line on this. Others in the early church decades said, absolutely not. We are a community of grace, and all are welcome, even imperfect people, just as Jesus welcomed all those imperfect people, including us, just a few years ago. And as they grappled with that problem, they remembered this story that Jesus told and was read a moment ago. We call it the parable of the weeds. And since this is gardening season and a lot of you are out in your yard, I thought this might be an interesting and fun story to look at. In fact, I find it very interesting. It's the story about a farmer, a landowner, who sowed wheat in his crops to grow in the months that come. But for some reason, we don't know why, he had some kind of enemy, someone who was jealous maybe of his affluence or whatever. And went in that same night after he put the seeds in for the wheat and just filled it up with seeds of all kind of weeds, things you don't want in your garden. And as the produce began to sprout early on, the servants of this landowner began to notice that it was not all looking like the wheat, that in fact there were weeds scattered all through the crop. And so the servants went to the owner and said, sure, sir, there's weeds everywhere. Do you want us to pull them up, to rip them out of your land? Well, you know, today there are plenty of Christian believers and plenty of churches who are very much like those servants. They want to pull up the weeds. They're like that couple who demanded that I kick James out of the church for singing at the bar on Friday night. They're people who want to purge the faithful and get rid of the weeds and kick out the sinners among us. And you know, that mentality is very much alive and well today. And the place we see it most played out is the most controversial issue today around homosexuality. Of course, many people don't have any problem with that as Christians. Others think it's sinful. But there are many in the United States who say we need to kick these people out and the other sinners out in their eyes of the church. This kind of very judgmental Christianity reminds me of a story I came upon not long ago. True story that has troubled me greatly since I heard it. Goes way, way back. Many, many years ago, maybe 100 or so, there was a ship primarily carrying passengers that sank off the coast of Nova Scotia in a bad storm. And very sadly, there was a lot of people who perished in that shipwreck, including the captain, but the crew worked hard and diligently. They were able to save 70 people, most, I think, were women and children, and they placed them in a huge rowboat. Now, when you and I think about a rowboat, we might think of going out to Center Hill Lake, you know, puttering around with four people. No, this was a massive one that were on these big ships back in the day, that could hold like 70 people, especially with so many women and children aboard. However, the weather that night was rough, and the crew members were concerned that the rowboat might be overcrowded and make it dangerous in the storm. And so, in an effort to get the ballast just right, they walked around that rowboat and just arbitrarily began to pick up people and toss them over into the cold sea where they clearly perished. Nighttime came, and during the night, the ship began to leak a little bit. Some water was coming on, and again, they were worried that maybe this would make them unstable. And so, again, through the night, the crew members just got up and threw people off the boat to their deaths of drowning through the night. And the end of that story is the next morning, when the sun rose and the crew finally arrived on shore in Nova Scotia, there were 9 people aboard the boat. So through the night, 61 souls were cast off to their death. Tragically, judgmental Christians and churches often act very much like that crew. They want the ballast of the church to be just right, so they want to throw out the sinners. Now, most don't do that formally. I've actually known of some churches that have formal processes of kicking out sinners, but usually, 99% of the time, it's done informally. They just let people know they're not welcome there anymore. And one way or another, they get rid of the undesirables. Like the sailors in that story, they simply throw them out. Here's a divorced person. Let's throw them out. Here's an alcoholic. Let's throw them out. Here's a person who is addicted to drugs. Let's throw them out. Here's an unwed mother, got pregnant before she was married. Let's throw her out. Here's a woman who wants to be a minister. My goodness, let's throw her out. Here is someone who believes in evolution. Oh, my goodness, let's throw them out. Here is a homosexual. Let's throw them out. And sadly, there are those in the Christian community and there are churches who want to get the ballast just right according to their minds anyway and get rid of the weeds and purge the sinners. And it is very interesting to me that Jesus absolutely rejects that approach in today's parable. When the servants came in that story and said to the home or to the landowner, "Do you want us to pull out the weeds?" He says, "No, because if you do, you're bound to hurt the wheat while you're at it. In your effort to pull the weeds, you will inevitably rip out, pull, and damage the good crop, the wheat that we are waiting for." And you know, it's hard to tell sometimes, isn't it? The difference between the wheat and the weeds, both in reality and symbolically in the church, as this parable clearly is about. Especially it's hard to tell the difference in the early stages of growth. I remember several years ago in another town and house that in the backyard of where I was living and my wife were living, there were these terrible weeds back there. And they had been growing a long time. They were like 2 feet tall. They looked terrible. And I was surprised my wife hadn't cut them. But one day she left to go somewhere. And I decided to take the weed eater out there. And I just whacked those weeds down. Raked them up, threw them away. And I thought, my wife is going to be so proud of me. She came home a few hours later. She wasn't proud at all. She was really pretty unhappy. She said, "What have you done with my flowers?" And I said, what flowers are you referring to? And she says, "The flowers that were in the backyard." I said, "Those were flowers?" She said, "Yes, they were surprise lilies." And I said, "Well, I guess I surprised them." Several months later, I took the weed eater back out. She happened to be in the yard, thank goodness, and I was about to mow down a bunch of weeds. She said, Stop. "That is asparagus, not weeds." You will not be surprised to know that I don't do garden work anymore, which is fine by me. I never liked it anyway. She can take care of it. But Jesus is telling us here, you can't tell the difference all the time between the good crop and the bad, between the wheat and the weeds. And even if you can, when you rip out the weeds, you're bound to hurt the wheat. And so the farmer said to his servants, "Don't pull them out. You will do more damage than good." And tragically, that is so true. Churches, and we're all familiar with some, they're in every community, that want to weed out the sinners in their midst, do such damage, both to those within the church that they're trying to kick out because they think they are somehow inferior, but it also does great damage outside the church. People see Christians and churches who have that kind of arrogant, self-righteous judgment, and they see that and say, "You know, if this is what Christianity is all about, I really don't want to have anything to do with it." And one of the major reasons, this has been shown very, very clearly in very scientific studies by sociologists over the last couple of decades, this is one of the major reasons why young adults are leaving the Church of Jesus Christ in America in the droves. They are tired of that kind of judgmental attitude. And so Jesus says, "Leave the weeds alone." Now, it would be very easy to stop, and I need to stop in just a second, and make the point that today's text tells us the church is to be a community of grace, not judgment, and I believe that deeply. And the main reason I ultimately became a United Methodist is because I was moved deeply by our emphasis on grace. Jesus clearly does not want the church to be a place of condemnation. He does not want us to weed out the undesirables. Rather, he wants the church to be a place of grace and forgiveness and acceptance, a place of open doors where all people are welcome, both saints and sinners, just as he welcomed them all. With obviously the hope that one day those of us who are sinners, which is every single one of us, will eventually become more saint-like over a lifetime. So the parable is very clear that we are to be a community and a people of faith, of grace. However, in full disclosure, that's not the whole story. To say that we should be non-judgmental and not weed out the sinners and be a community of grace, all of which is 100% true, does not mean there will never be any judgment. As United Methodists, we are a little afraid to talk about that, but there is judgment, the Bible tells us, at least eventually. And in this parable, we see it. The servants say, Master, should we pull out the weeds? No, he said, it will hurt the wheat. So it doesn't stop there. The farmer says, let the wheat and the weeds grow together. And as at the harvest time, several months down the pike, the weeds will be separated and burned, and the wheat will be gathered and placed in the barn. And so the truth is, one day, Scripture tells us, the harvest will come. And one day, every person, myself included, along with you, will stand before God and give an accounting of our life. So we must never think that somehow we just come to Jesus and we come to church and live like the devil and escape consequences for our behavior. No, judgment ultimately will come. But, and this is crucial, God does the judging, not us. It is God's job, not our job, to do the judging. It is God's job to do the weeding, because that is far above our pay grade. And so in the meantime, before the harvest comes, the mandate of Jesus is absolutely clear in this text and 100 others. We are to open the doors of faith and church for all who want to come in, and leave the weeding to God. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, Amen.